Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 4 of NML Crossing, where today we're going to be taking a look at the flagship book, Batman, the, titular Batman book here, which, Now, Batman, I'm not talking about this issue. This is going to be a really fun issue we're going to discuss, but the title overall, the Batman title, is proving to be like the book that's the hardest one to track down and fill in holes for. I don't know if that's just because, people hold on to Batman or, Batman is Batman. It wasn't always the powerhouse seller as it is today and has been in times before, but I think it's kind of the Bat book that people will collect if they're going to collect one, right? I've been doing a lot of research in odd places that I usually wouldn't do research, which is to say places online where you could buy comic books, because I might have to resort to doing that to fill in a few of these books. And, it's funny when you compare the asking prices, and this is probably 4 or 5 of the more well-known places that you would look for back issues. When you compare the prices for Batman to pretty much any other Bat book, you're looking at a pretty big difference in what those issues are demanding on the back issue market. Very, very eye-opening, because this is the sort of research I haven't done before. If I look for an issue of Detective, it's probably going to be like $2 with, $5 shipping, which is kind of silly. If I look at Shadow of the Bat, it's like $2. If I look at anything, it's like maybe $1 to $3. And again, shipping costs kind of eat into any sort of celebration for finding them that cheap. But when you get to Batman, like on the low end of Batman books for this era, you're looking at $6-$7. It's pretty crazy. And naturally, I mean, there is always the possibility we're going to find these things cheaper. And I usually do. I do a pretty inclusive sweep of my local shops to try to find the best deals here. So, I have gotten some of these books for $1 or $2. But it's odd that like the baseline asking price for Batman is like 3 or 4 times cover price. And it, when I first started putting pieces together for this project and looked at my need list, it was kind of staggering to the point where I was like, maybe this isn't the best idea. This is going to be a very, very expensive little experiment. But, as I've, hit the stores and refamiliarized myself with the DC back issues, the back issue bins, I've been quite lucky. But I'm not going to lie, there are a few issues from this era that I'm sweating a little bit. Not for the price, but just for the findability and finding them in a timely manner. Now, before we get into today's book, another aside about the back issue bins, because my back issue bin hunts have been very, very focused up until recently, where it was pretty much all Marvel. It was mostly X-Books and Daredevil trying to fill in holes there. So I kind of went to the same spots in all the shops. And now when I'm, for lack of a better term, broadening my horizons to find some Bat books, if you're familiar with the dollar bins and stuff, you'll probably know that they're mostly DC Comics. I guess DC Comics are a little bit less sexy on the secondary market, less likely to be speculator bait, less likely to have some lousy movie attached to it. So it's mostly DC. And it's funny how the more you look in these bins, the more you see patterns. When the quarter and dollar bins were coming back after the 90s speculator boom, they were mostly full of early Image, a lot of just pretty much anything early 90s, because it was just printed to glut levels and was bought by people who didn't care about comics. So people were just turning in their crap, and I mean, you knew what you were going to find in a dollar bin or a 50-cent bin. And over the years, it's kind of a case of same as it ever was. You know, the cheapo bins are just chock full of yesterday's news. You know, if it was a big movie last year, they're in the bins this year because Marvel or DC just overprinted the hell and spun off so many titles to try to squeeze every last dime out of us. But then, you know, the seasons change, the next slew of movies comes out, and last year's movies are, well, they are last year's movies. So the bins become full of that kind of stuff. So this was the sort of phenomenon I was hoping to kind of document early on in my blogging non-career. I doubt anybody remembers this, but like in the first few months that I was doing Chris's on Infinite Earths, I would have a regular column that I called Bin Beat, where I kind of took the temperature of the back issue bins and the cheapo bins and kind of just documented what was there. And, you know, I shared some of the stuff that I found, and it was a fun idea, and it was a nice break for me from just doing my normal hard-hitting analysis of a random comic book. But it was during this most recent, you know, bin burst that I've been on that I was reminded of the Bin Beat column and how I used to, you know, just track the trends and stuff, because some trends are subtle and some are, you can't miss them. They're just so in your face. And I mean, this has nothing to do with Bat Books or No Man's Land or anything like that. It's just a funny little anecdote that kind of got stuck in my head here. And I mean, it is just that. It's an anecdote of the comics bin culture in my neck of the woods, you know, the Phoenix metropolitan area. But I was texting with a buddy of mine as I was going through the bins looking to fill in some holes here in these Bat Books. And these two titles kept showing up in the bins, and I was just so annoyed by it. It was just so... Every time I saw them, it was just like, oh, I don't want to see these anymore, because it was just so damn ubiquitous, and it reminded me of just the comic industry glut of now. And my buddy Dave, I was texting with him, and I said, I think I can, you know, proclaim that the people of the Phoenix metro area are officially done with Guardians of the Galaxy and the Suicide Squad. I mean, the 50-cent and dollar bins are just overflowing with these books, and they're just, I don't know, kind of a reminder of how kind of fickle the industry and the community is, where it's like, what's hot right now, everything's just trying to cash in, whether it's the companies or the consumers, we're all just trying to cash in, and it's kind of sad. You know, I wish we cared more about the stories and the characters and what happens between the covers, maybe a little bit more than, you know, which variant cover you ended up getting. You know, it's, I don't know, maybe that's why I don't talk about things from current year so much anymore. It's just kind of depressing for the health and future of the industry. Not to be a doom and gloom guy, but I don't know. I guess I'm a doomy and gloomy guy. You know, I share that because I'm, you know, genuinely curious. And don't you just hate it when people say they're genuinely curious? But in fact, I am quite curious about the bin scene near you. I'd love to hear which books are clogging your guys' cheapo bins here. If the Suicide Squad, Guardians of the Galaxy glut is a Phoenix-only thing, or if you guys have something different going on in your neck of the woods here. For the longest time, it was the DC Weekly titles. You know, things like 52, Countdown, the Batman Eternal, Future's End. Even going into, the hell was it? Convergence. Oh, good Lord. Convergence everywhere. But those are kind of filtering out to be replaced with, you know, the hot movie properties of the last couple of years. But anyway, hit me up if you have any kind of insight as to the, you know, the bin beat in your neck of the woods. I'd definitely love to hear about it and to chat about it. I try to, anytime I'm traveling, I try to hit at least one or two comic shops just to, I don't know, kind of take the temperature and see how different different areas are. I was in the Boston area in mid-October last year, and we took the train out to Salem, and I was able to visit a Salem comic store, which I hope was the shop that Reggie went to when he moved out to Salem. I hope it was the only one there, so I'm thinking it probably was. And that was a neat little experience and a nice little bit of culture shock to, you know, just see a different, a different area's comic shop. A month later, we were in Omaha, and I stopped by a comic store there, and it's always pretty cool to learn about different comic shops. It's like, it's one of those odd things where you feel like you're, 10 years old again. You know, the candy store has been restocked, and it's all new flavors, it's pretty cool stuff. So I'd love to hear your guys' experience and hear about what books are hot, what books are not in your area. And boy, I mean, maybe I'm getting used to this quicker than I thought, because I'm on tangents upon tangents here. One more thing before we get into the book. I came into a stack of Comic Retailer magazine, which was speculator bait back in the early 90s, but for the shop owners, it was basically a trade telling the shops what books to buy. And the cool part about it, I mean, it was cool just as an ephemeral piece, but there was actually a breakdown of the United States regionally, where they would kind of survey a bunch of shops in like the New England area, the Northeast, the Southwest, the Northwest, the Midwest, and they would talk about what books were hot in those areas. And the cool thing was that they were all different. There was some overlap, of course, because the industry is only so big. But like, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but like, say in New England, the top book, the book that everybody wanted was Punisher. And then you get into the Midwest, where the top book was Spawn, and Punisher was like fourth. It was really, really interesting and insightful. And I mean, talk about a small sample size. It probably has absolutely no sort of empirical value, but it's kind of cool to see that kind of exercise being done and just it being discussed at all. So, hey, share your stories. Maybe we'll do an inclusive bin beat sort of thing somewhere down the line where we talk about things that are only semi-interesting to us. But with all that said, how about we get into today's book here? I apologize for going on as long as I did. Today, we are talking Batman 553, April 1998 cover date. Our story is called Cataclysm Part 3, Lifelines. Written by, a great writer. I don't know how to say his name. I have seen and I have typed his name thousands of times. Doug, are we saying Mensch? I know Phoenix is spelled with an O-E. Is it Meench? Moench? I'm going to say Mensch. That's kind of splitting the difference there. Doug Mensch, if I'm wrong, I probably am. Please let me know how to say his name. Pencils, Klaus Janson? Klaus Janson? Oh boy, I'm awful. Inks, oh no. Sal Buscema? Buscema? This is why I stuck to writing for so long. Doug Mensch, Klaus Janson, Sal Buscema. Buscema. Oy. Colors, Gregory Wright and Android Images. Letters, Todd Klein. It's not clean, right? Edits, Gorfinkel and O'Neill. Cover price, $1.95. Now we open at the Wayne Corp building, where Lucius Fox is chatting up his wife on the phone. He tells her he had to work late, but he would be headed home right away. Just then, however, he begins to feel the earth move under his feet. The phone and the power go out. He and some assistants take a look out the window and bear witness to the Gotham skyline beginning to collapse and pancake onto itself. Now, one of the assistants rightfully begins to panic, worried that the very building they're currently standing in might just be the next to fall. Now it's here we get our reminder that all Wayne-owned real estate has been fortified. Lucius shares that Bruce was actually mocked for this by the board. Now the board claimed that this expense would not be worth it in the long run because, you know, earthquakes don't happen in Gotham. Now these board members no longer work for Wayne and are likely somewhere out there in the rubble that was once Gotham. From here, we get a bit of a time ticker tracking the decimation. At 7:04, we know 7:03 is when it hit. Now 7:04 is when skyscrapers began to fall. 7:05 is when we notice that gas mains are rupturing. And a minute later at 7:06, fires start to rage. Jump over to 7:07, we're at the Gotham PD HQ where Commissioner Gordon is trying to contact the mayor. Just then, as his phone dies, the bat signal comes crashing through the roof, landing right on top of him. Next stop, the ruins of Wayne Manor. And, of course, we're reminded that this particular piece of Wayne real estate could not be fortified, because, you know, that giant, gaping, crime-fighting cave that it sits on top of. Here we see that Alfred is still pinned under some of the wreckage, but from off-panel, Batman calls out to him. Our hero is able to come to, and he pulls himself off the edge of that bottomless waterfall we left him dangling from back in Shadow number 73. Doesn't take him long to locate the aching Alfred, and Batman promises to save him, no matter the risk. From here, back to Police HQ, and the officers are in full-blown panic. Now, this panic is interrupted by Barbara Gordon, who fires a shot into the sky. Surely there could have been a less dramatic way of getting their attention, but what the hell do I know? Anyway, she introduces herself as the daughter of Jim Gordon and the stepdaughter of Lieutenant Sarah Essen. And, as the only clear-minded person here, she begins giving out the orders. She appeals to the officers' fear, their own survival instincts, their worries about their families. She says she can't stop them from leaving, but reminds them that to do so would constitute a dereliction of duty. I'm not sure if that's an actual threat, or even a threat she can make, or if it's just a simple appeal to their sense of duty. Whatever the case, it works. Now, as the officers come around, Babs doubles down. She tells them that since the quake, Gotham no longer consists of strangers. You know, everybody is on the same team. You know, they're all in this together. She tells the crew of No Longer Strangers that they need some juice, so somebody better dig up the emergency generator. You would hope that somebody would have thought of this before, but they did not. Back to the bat. Now, he's still trying to dislodge Alfred from the rubble, and he eventually does so by using that giant penny from the cave to... I really don't know. It kind of just rolls off and Alfred's free. I guess it was a load-bearing penny. Anyway, they confab about the quake, Batman reiterating that, you know, this is something that he'd long been afraid of, hence all the retrofitting and fortifying of his properties. He says that this solves some recent mysteries that he'd encountered, mysteries having to do with rabid bats and sparking earthlights. Can't say for certain that this actually happened on panel, and if it did, when, because there aren't any editor's notes here to speak of. Now, Alfred asks how they're going to escape the Batcave since all exits have been blocked off. Batman looks down at that waterfall, and he hopes that the bat's scuba gear wasn't damaged in the quake. Back to Babs, who asks an officer if anybody had heard anything from her father, and, no, nobody has. She quickly brushes this off as to not begin to spiral herself. This is a really cool thing, and it's pretty subtly done. We'll talk about it more later on. Now, a call comes over the radio, and it's a firefighter who hasn't the foggiest idea where to start fighting the multitude of infernos currently ablaze in Gotham. Oh, and also, due to the damage to the city's plumbing, there is next to zero water pressure to fight those fires with. Now, Babs, she ain't got no time for this nonsense, and she demands the firefighter start linking hoses to the river to get some water flowing toward the worst fire. Now, the firefighter snaps back, claiming that, hey, you know, I'm currently looking at dozens of the worst fires, so what do I do? And Barbara is like, she's just done with this dude, and she says, pick one. You know, you're just going to stand there talking about it? Pick one, anyone, just do something. She next turns to a nearby officer to ask him how many fireboats they have access to. And the dude's like, oh yeah, we have those, huh? We should probably use them. And I mean, I get being lost in the chaos of a situation, but this is either an indictment on the ineptitude of Gotham's finest, or an attempt at making Barbara Gordon seem smarter and more put together and capable than anybody in the city. Gotta say, it's a good look for her. The GCPD, however, they ain't looking great. Just then, Harvey Bullock stomps in. He reports that Billy Wildman's dead, also that Anarchy got away. Before he did, however, he did help Harvey rescue some survivors, so maybe the kid ain't all that bad after all. Worth noting, Harv's right arm has been impaled by a metal beam. We get about a page and a half of him removing the rebar and sanitizing the wound with a bottle of booze. It's really, really well done. Meanwhile, Barbara's still giving out orders, pointing out the need for emergency services, doctors, and medical supplies to be out on the streets right away. Bullock asks if anybody's seen the commish. Barbara says there hasn't been time to look for him, to which Bullock's all, F that, I'm making the time right now. And Barbara whispers thank God to herself, which, like I said, is pretty subtle here. I guess relatively subtle. Really cool thing to see. I mean, obviously, she wanted someone to search for her father, or to send out a search party in general. But to do so could come across as pretty self-serving, and maybe take her eye off the prize, maybe make her appear a little less in control of the situation to the folks she's trying to, you know, disperse out to help out. Bullock taking this decision out of her hands and attending to the situation more or less assuages her of any of that sort of guilt. From here, we hop back to the Batcave, where Alfred wonders what Bruce is on about regarding the Bat scuba gear. Batman says he plans to follow the floodwaters to their source. Back to the GCPD HQ, where Bullock locates Gordon pinned under the Bat signal. And when he sees it, he wonders where Batman might be right now. And so, back to the cave, where Alfred warns that the stream could possibly run for miles. And what's more, it may not ever reach the surface. It may not go anywhere. Batman insists that it's the only way before masking up and hopping into the drink. Back to HQ, Harvey pries the beacon off the commish. He comments that it's heavier than a bell for a Donno, which is a reference to a 1944 novel by John Hersey, which sounds kind of interesting. Now, once Jim's been rescued, we find out his wife Sarah Essen is currently on assignment with Mackenzie Hardback Bach. And I'm not sure if this assignment's in Gotham or not. I'd assume it is, you know, because Sarah will be part of the No Man's Land story. I'm assuming we'll see them both before long, anyway. Now, back to Babs. The fires are spreading and multiplying. The daisy-chained hoses aren't proving to make much of a dent. We find out that FEMA is still several hours out. As Barbara is struggling to get more services and supplies headed Gotham's way, well, she gets a bit of good news. Her father enters the room, and he seems, you know, none the worse for wear. Now we close out back at the Batcave with Batman scuba-ing, that's a hard word to say, scuba-ing, toward, well, Lord only knows. Like, he's just picking a direction, and he's going wherever he's going. Just then, the first aftershock hits, and that is where we leave it. Next time out, we are hopping into Azrael. Azrael number 40. I don't read much Azrael, so this will be kind of, I want to say interesting. Hopefully it'll be interesting, but I guess we'll worry about that next time. For now, though, let's talk about this issue, which was pretty great. And it was a wonderful focus on Barbara Gordon. And, you know, I try not to be provocative here when I talk about comics or just in general, but it's stories like this that remind me of how vital Barbara was as Oracle. I mean, she was truly one of the most important people, not only in the Bat books, but in the DC universe overall. And I feel it's such a disservice that this phase of her existence has kind of been like thrown into that women in refrigerator straw man, which, I mean, women in refrigerators is definitely a thing, but I feel like it's just been to the point where we use it to describe everything, to where you can't do anything now. It's really, I don't know, it's kind of disappointing that, you know, Barbara's time as Oracle is, I don't want to say looked down on, but not as valued as much as I think it should have been or could have been. I remember like when the new 52 was announced. And I wasn't involved in any of these discussions because I don't ever get involved in discussions. But I remember seeing people kind of disappointed that they were putting her back into a bat suit because she was more effective as Oracle. She was more important as Oracle. And I remember seeing people arguing that they were like unfridging her. You know, people who were for her going back to being Batgirl. They saw this as a victory, that she was being unfridged. And it was like, you're not seeing the bigger picture here, that Oracle was so important. You know, the Justice League would turn to Oracle for help. And she was everywhere. And she was everywhere in an organic way. It wasn't like a shoehorned, you know, Maria Hill from S.H.I.E.L.D. or Amanda Waller from, what the hell is she from, Argus? I don't know where even she's from anymore. But it wasn't like just sticking them into every single book. This was, I don't know, more organic, and it just felt right. And I mean, not to mention, when Barbara was Batgirl, it was kind of a campy character back in the long ago. I don't know. I really don't want to go too deep into this particular rabbit hole, but I'll just say that Barbara as Oracle was awesome. And this issue makes really good use of her tactical mind and cooler head. She didn't need to be strapping on a cape or a cowl, and it's not like it would have made any difference anyway, right? You know, what's one more non-superpowered costumed hero in amid fires and buildings collapsing? It's, she was definitely of more use here in this role. I will say, however, that making Barbara look this good did come at a bit of a cost, because the GCPD looked like a bunch of herded cats here. They couldn't think even a half step ahead. They were directionless. And without Barbara giving orders, I feel like they'd probably have just stood around watching the entire city burn until there was no more city left to burn. Really not a good look for them. Hopefully they get their crap together before long. I appreciated the interaction between Barbara and Bullock, as mentioned during the synopsis. Like Barbara projecting that like odd stoicism and calm regarding the safety of her father. Now, I don't know if Harvey was acting with Babs in mind when he stomped off to look for the commish, or if that's just what he would have done anyway. And I kind of dig that ambiguity. You know, like, did he see that, you know, this young woman was truly scared for her father and didn't want to make the call herself, so he just stepped in and did it? Or does he just have such loyalty to his friend that he was just going to do that either way? I like that a lot. I also really dug Barbara's relief when Harv proclaimed that he'd find her dad. Because, I mean, and this is me projecting a lot, but I feel like she was trying really hard not to break character in front of the officers she was trying to organize and give direction to. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's only human to worry about those closest to you during times of crisis and emergency, right? But I like that there is something to read into here, where it's like, you know, Barbara has a cool head, but in the back of her mind, it's like, where's my dad? It's pretty cool. Now, I also got to give props to the mention of FEMA, because so often in corporate comics, I feel like we're supposed to forget that they're taking place in a wider, shared, and somewhat real universe. Like, if something horrific like this happens in Batman's neck of the woods, well, that doesn't mean it only affects Batman. You know? Though in comics, that's usually how it plays out. Here, though, this is bigger than Batman. It's bigger than the whole damn Bat family. It's bigger than Gotham City, in fact. So, hearing that the feds are coming to help makes complete sense. And honestly, had it not been mentioned, I'd probably be complaining about it. Though, in fairness, my complaint wouldn't have been like, hey, where's FEMA? It would have been like, hey, where's the Justice League at? Which, I guess, well, now that I mention it, where are the Justice League? Huh. Anyway, I mean, it's only minutes have passed, so yeah, we'll give them a little bit of time. Now, who haven't we talked about yet? Oh yeah, our titular hero. He doesn't get much screen time here, but his story does get a bit of a nudge forward and the cliffhanger. You know, we do see that he's alive. He manages to pull Alfred out of the rubble, and he's heading down into the great depths below in order to try and locate a way out. But for the moment, he is the least interesting thing going on in his own book. Maybe that'll change. I'm sure it will. Overall, this is a very interesting issue. Really, really fun stuff here. Definitely not the GCPD's finest hour, nor the GCFD's, if we're being honest. But Barbara Gordon came off great, and I suppose that's good enough for now. I mean, we're getting, like I talked about with the issue of Nightwing we talked about. I said talked about twice in the same sentence. That's just an indictment about how hacky I am at this. We saw that Nightwing was taking care of that bus. You know, like I said, then it was a micro look at a macro event. Here, it's a little bit broader than just helping a dozen or so survivors on a bus, but this was definitely a micro look at a macro event. Barbara taking one precinct of the GCPD and trying to organize them, trying to just make a dent in the damage and the destruction and the dozens of the worst fires that that are currently emblazing the city. It's really, really good stuff. And you know, and I'm loving that this is the first time I'm experiencing this bit of the story. Like I said multiple times, and I'm sure I'll say multiple more times, I only read this as the abridged version. And it wasn't even this. It was just No Man's Land. It wasn't Cataclysm, wasn't anything leading up to No Man's Land. It was just plain No Man's Land. So it's really cool to be experiencing this and to, I don't know, paint a bigger picture of what's to come. And I don't want to say provide more context, because the abridged versions did give the context. And I mean, how much context is there really? It's, these are the cards we're dealt. We got to figure something out. But it's cool all the same to be experiencing this the way I am and really not know what twists and turns might be coming before, you know, No Man's Land actually begins in earnest. So, having a good time. I hope you are as well. And as I've mentioned, if you're interested in following along, it's very, very easy to do so. At least Cataclysm, I believe all the issues of Cataclysm are included on the Marvel Unlimited of DC. I gotta figure out the name of that damn service. Is it DC Infinite? It's not DC Unlimited, right? Yeah, I'll figure it out. It's note to self. Research. Go figure. I know it's there. And also, the Cataclysm Collected Edition is on Hoopla. So if you have a library card and access to Hoopla, you could read it for free, which is pretty damn cool. I'd also love to hear your thoughts on this storyline, on these issues, on the creators, on just the state of, well, comics then, now, or whenever the hell you want. I'm down to talk about anything. You can find me several different ways. Chris is on InfiniteEarths.com, and WeirdComicsHistory@gmail.com. I've kind of co-opted the old X-lapsed Facebook group for sharing these pieces, so you can find me there as well if you want to talk about it. But with all that said, let's take this one home. I want to thank you all so much for sharing some of your day with me today. Until next time, as always, or hopefully as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Do not fall out of love, we die.